Congressman Mike Rogers. We haven't talked to him in a while, but he's been busy. Congressman, how are you?
I am doing well, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Before we get into all these important issues, Mike Rogers is now tweeting. What made you become interested in Twitter?
Well, you know, it was that we had such a strong request from people we represent that says, hey, you know, Facebook is great. We appreciate that, but Twitter would be helpful. So it just got to a point where we had so many requests that we thought we better go to Twitter.
Not that you're going to
be hearing about you know, my pie selection or what muffin I had at the local. Not going there.
Now, will you be actually doing these, or will you have one of your staffers?
I'll be doing them.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's. But again, you're not going to. You will not be prolific. This is not the Kim Kardashian Twitter, financial Twitter system.
All right,
you won't be hearing that I stayed in a Holiday Inn Express last night, kind of a thing.
All right, because it's all over. If you Google you, and it says right at the top of the page, Congressman Mike Rogers now on Twitter, so it's a big deal.
Yeah, well, it's we're doing great. I'll be honest with you. My staff has been saying you got to do it. I've been saying, really, who wants to know? Your socks don't match this morning or something. But they convinced me, and we had so many requests for us to get on it. And people do like to receive information in a whole variety of ways. And so I thought it was probably the right thing to do to accommodate them to get the information in the way that they can.
All right. Since the last time we talked, a lot has happened in the Middle East. Tell us what you think.
Well, a little disappointed that the president did a zero drawdown. I think the generals that I talked to were looking for about 15,000 for a shorter period of time just to ensure that Iraq is on the right track, not because we're going to be involved in combat operations, but it is a force for stability and influence there, and when you remove it completely, leaves a big hole on influence. And so I believe that was but just a little bit premature, and it's a hard thing. It was they would have had to engage in some hard diplomatic issues, and they just chose not to do that. It was disappointing.
Also, with the Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi falling, there's still much unknown about the new government that will be created there. What's your take on that story?
Well, I mean, this has always been the challenge, is that once Muammar Gaddafi was gone, and you and I talked about this, that all the tribal differences, the ethnic differences, the political differences, the local militias vying for power, this is now the hardest part of it. My concern always was, were we doing enough to secure the weapons systems? That, to me, was our national security interest. So we've got to surge, and I've talked to Secretary Clinton about this, surge our diplomatic effort there so that we can help mitigate some of the trouble that's bound to happen when you have really as different a group of people as trying to come together for a government as I've seen in a long time. And they're very tribal and ethnically oriented there. And are we doing enough to get these weapons out of the hands, or keep them out of the hands of bad guys? And we've got a lot of work to do there. Again, it takes engagement. We can't just expect that Muammar Gaddafi's gone and we're going to go away, and we can't just expect that, now that we're out of Iraq, it doesn't mean Iran is going to try to gain influence there, and same with Afghanistan. So the challenges don't end. The challenges, I think, just change in the way we approach it.
Congressman, yesterday we had terrorism expert Dr. Waleed Fares on the program, and he believes that Iran is trying to be the next Russia over there. And not that I'm a proponent for keeping troops overseas, but it seems like we're pulling the troops out and the job isn't finished in that part of the region yet. What's your take on that?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I have to tell you what was, when the president came out, and he surprised everybody. I think he even surprised the Pentagon. I think he just said, hey, man, this is the easiest way out. Let's take it. And it was right on the heels of the Iranian event where they tried to commit an act of political assassination by blowing up innocent Americans and killing the Saudi ambassador here in the United States, Washington, D.C. And so they were so brazen, and they believed, and then they were getting away literally with murder in Iraq of U.S. forces. I've seen some estimates where they believe they may be, they being the Iranian Quds Force, may have contributed to as many as 600-plus deaths of U.S. soldiers there. And so they do that, and we say, boy, you shouldn't do that. And then just a few weeks later, after they are spending lots of time trying to influence the outcome in Iraq, we announce that, hey, you know what, this is hard. We're just packing up and going home. That it really worries me. There is a Cold War going on, and that's why Iran was doing what they were doing, to trying to kill the Saudi ambassador. They're looking at more influence, and they're incredibly violent. Matter of fact, the State Department lists them outside of Al-Qaeda as the largest state sponsor of terrorism, and they have more U.S. blood on their hands than any organization other than Al-Qaeda, and that's something we should be concerned about.
Well, when we talk about jobs, that's still a big issue, obviously, here in the United States. What's the latest in your efforts and in the administration and Congress trying to find some common ground in creating more jobs?
Yeah, there are 15 bills that have passed the House of Representatives sitting in the Senate, and we're hoping, we've been in talks with the administration to try to change the rhetoric. They've kind of hit the high gear on a campaign mode, I argue, way too early. They really do need to be about trying to find some solutions here and not the differences. And move some of these 15 bills. They're regulatory bills. They are jobs that are bills that we know and have wide support, many of them bipartisan bills, on regulatory relief for companies, on putting some certainty back so that they will make investments, hire people. Just sitting over in the Senate, and the president's jobs plan, the first round of it, didn't pass by a bipartisan vote in the Senate. So some notion that he just but doesn't even acknowledge that, I would hope that he would kind of stop campaigning around the country, come back, and start putting something together that he could get both Republicans and Democrats to support in the United States Senate. So it's been a little frustrating. I hope that the president doesn't believe that starting the campaign now guarantees his reelection, even if it's at the expense of somebody not getting the job. I hope he hasn't made that calculation. I don't think it's too late for him to come back and try to fix this thing, but I hope that's what he ends up doing.
Can his jobs plan work?
You know, there's a lot of problems with it. A, it spends way too much money. And B, the tax credits for employers are only temporary. And the money that he gives to state and local governments, we saw that in the first stimulus bill, didn't work. I mean, it just not only didn't work, things got worse. And so I argue that we've tried this before, and that sense of urgency, if you recall, was the same way he used to push his health care plan that we now know is got horrible, horrible problems, and it's adding about, some argue, $2.6 trillion in new debt. And it's not, and rates are going up, all of that. The stimulus bill, remember, if you don't pass this now, unemployment will go over 8%. Well, they passed it, and unemployment soared past it, 8%. And so now he's doing the same thing. You got to pass this now. It's got to be hurry up, do it, let's do it, don't read it, let's go. And the problem is, way too expensive. All of the fixes are very temporary. What does your state and local government do 12 months after this thing? Say if it passes and you get your check, you have a big goose egg after the first year. So these people that are supposedly hired or retained, how do you afford to keep them? I mean, there's just so many problems with a bill like this, and that's why you don't want to rush something like that when there are so many better opportunities that won't cost the United States taxpayer one penny and still gets businesses back hiring.
Can the president's mortgage plan work?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not convinced that it'll work. One of the things that we have to do is allow banks, and this has been our frustration, allow banks to work it out with the locals. And here's what's happened. The rhetoric was great, but the regulators that work for the administration were saying to banks and told banks, listen, if you want to keep these certain loans, you can do that, but you have to increase your loss loan reserve. And what does that mean to you and me? It means they have to raise capital. So in other words, they'll have less money to lend or less money to cover these loans. And what we've been saying is, Mr. President, you got to get in harmony. It's great to say that. It's great to beat up on the banks. That's fantastic. But you can't send your regulators in to tell them who they can and cannot save on these loans. It's been really frustrating.
As we look at what's happening with the economy and now we have people taking to the streets, what is your opinion on the Occupy protesters? They've been here in Lansing in small numbers, and now it's turning a little violent. What do you think about the Occupy situation, and what are you hearing from your constituents in D.C.?
Well, you know, the people back home are worried about feeding their families and trying to get back to work. They are, by and large, people who play by the rules and just don't want the system tilted against them. The occupiers, their messages all over the place. You know, some want health care for pets. It's hard to explain. Some don't like banks. Some are now mad at the police. Some are mad. It is a whole collection of smaller issues that I think the media and I think certain political circles are trying to say, no, this is what it's all about, because it fits somebody's political agenda. When they're getting violent and they went to the Smithsonian here in Washington, D.C., and they tried to get in and attack the Smithsonian. I'm not sure what that has to do with the bad economy. One of the world's premier museums, where they had to pepper spray them to get them out, and they attacked police officers. I mean, it made absolutely no sense. And to me, we ought to continue to focus on the issues that are going to mean people are going to have an opportunity to get back to work, keep their jobs, and grow the economy. It's the only way we're going to solve the debt problem. It's the only way we're going to get out of this thing and restore confidence in the American people. And I think I think it's a huge distraction to the issues that are important that we need to come to some consensus on here in Washington.
All right, before we let you go, you always give us information about what's hot and new. What are you working on? What are we going to be hearing about?
Well, I am working on right now all of the issues coming out of the super committee. We're trying to determine if, in fact, there's a possibility or a slight possibility for tax reform as a part of all of the trimming that they have to do. So we've spent a lot of time and effort trying to focus on that. I think at the end of the day, we won't be able to get tax reform right now, but we will get the cuts that we need to do so that we can move forward and strengthen the economy and get people back to work.
Thanks so much, Congressman. Enjoy your day.
Hey, thanks, Tony.